Here's what's popping on today's episode.
Something that stops artists from creating is the fear of not living up to their last good piece.
Oh, that's so real. If you don't like yourself, you need to get to know yourself better. And if you don't like someone else, you just need to get to know them better.
My misconception was also that she was thinking about me constantly, when actually, they don't really care. Welcome back to Popping Perfectionism.
Hello
again. And we are here starting a new season that we could not be more excited about. This season, Perfectionism in the Workplace, is kind of the vision, like long-term, for Popping Perfectionism, because there's so much to talk about with perfectionism in the workplace specifically. And it's something everyone can relate to. And I think our male audience can relate to more.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, oh, you're podcast, like, I don't know, I know a girlfriend that like has perfectionism, or oh, my sister, oh, my mom. It's like, no, you are like a major perfectionist, and we're here to tell you that it's affecting your career, gentlemen and women.
And yes, because we often, I feel like we often, when people talk about perfectionism, like you said, they often refer the women in their lives to our podcast, or like to the topic of perfectionism, and I feel like often the perfectionist outlet for men is in the workplace.
Totally.
Right? Because that's where, I don't know, there's a whole bunch that goes into it that we'll talk about and get into in this season.
This episode of Popping Perfectionism is brought to you by Market Social. Run your event like a human being. Simple event marketing and management built on text messaging so you can reach your people. Check out their link in our show notes. And if you're enjoying this episode, pause the show now and give Popping Perfectionism a 5-star review.
When we first started the podcast 3 years ago, this was a topic that we really wanted to tackle, but when we did it, we wanted to do it right, which is why it's now season 4 that we're doing it, and we feel like we can do it well, and we have a lot of people, we have a lot of guests coming on this season that are experts in this, and so it's gonna be really good.
And on that note, we also have this beautiful studio, and we failed to give a shout out last time, which we have to do.
We literally have to.
Our friend Ryan offered this amazing studio that he literally built and has all of the equipment and all of the stuff, and he is on the Popping Perfectionism train, the dream, and so he's part of the team now, helping us take it to the next level.
So we're gonna get into season 4. So just to illustrate to everyone truly how prevalent perfectionism is in the workplace, because I think, again, a lot of people just have misconceptions about what perfectionism is, and they think, you know, it's people who have to have really good handwriting or people who are really organized or blah blah blah. Often that can be symptoms of it, right? And especially in the workplace, you think like, oh, it's the person who has their desktop completely perfectly organized,
or even high achievers,
which
is
like
part of it. Yes.
Yeah. Or people who, like, you know, like I have a friend who's in marketing, and like he's like, I work so much and like so late because when I do videos or social posts, they have to be perfect, which, again, yeah, that's part of it. That's for sure part of it. But it's so much more rampant than we think. So to illustrate to you guys how rampant it is, this is a research done by the Hardin Group. It was done on 1,200 survey participants. So, which honestly, like, I feel like isn't like that big of a sample group, but big enough, truly, big enough. And Alicia and I have done and will continue to do our own research as well on this and be presenting that to you guys. Because again, this is like, we really think like our bread and butter and what we really are super passionate about when it comes to perfectionism. So 92% of respondents consider themselves perfectionists, which first of all is crazy, because I feel like every other person we talk to is like, I'm not a perfectionist. And then they hear our podcast and they're like,
Oh.
72% believe perfectionism leads to anxiety and depression, which is accurate. 68% believe it leads to burnout. 46% believe that it causes high workplace turnover. 86% believe that work is impacted negatively by perfectionist expectations. 66% believe perfectionism leads to fear of failure and conflict avoidance. And 40% take criticism and negative feedback too seriously because of perfectionism. That is one that I think we touched on the last episode, but I want to touch on again. That I think is a hidden symptom of perfectionism is the whole like taking feedback too seriously.
Yes.
I
actually think that's part of, because Anna and I are going to share our individual stories with how perfectionism has affected us in the workplace, because I feel perfectionism has affected you and I really differently.
Yeah.
In almost every aspect of our lives.
Yes.
Which is great, because then we can provide different insights. So Anna and I are going to share how it has affected both of us. And I'm pretty sure on my list, feedback.
Let me read it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Taking feedback personally. That's something that I'm literally going to share with you guys.
Yeah. So we will touch on that. Because, and to, I guess, lay the groundwork for that, one of the main differences between Alicia and I and how we've experienced perfectionism, I'd say we both have experienced both of these sides a little bit, but it's more prevalent for you and more prevalent for me. Is for me, it's pedestal mindset, right? We've talked about this before, where you either place someone else on a pedestal above you or you place yourself on a pedestal above everyone else. And just because, like, my upbringing, like how I like was raised, blah, 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 I often am placing myself on a pedestal, which I know is not a great thing. Okay. I'm working on it. And then you've talked a lot about how imposter syndrome is like a big thing for you. And that's another, that's like on the major flip side of perfectionism, is where you're obviously very qualified and you have every right to be where you are doing what you're doing, but you just feel like you're not because you're not perfect, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So, anyway, we don't have to get into that right now, but that is a point that we're going to be talking about.
Well, we will, because that we'll just take over with my experience in the workplace right now, because imposter syndrome is actually the very first one that I wrote down, the first point.
Yes.
So I'm going to take this really quick and read some information to you all about the definition of imposter syndrome and what it is. So from Psychology Today, it says that people who struggle with imposter syndrome believe that they are undeserving of their achievements and the high esteem in which they are, in fact, generally held. So it's like, even if they have high esteem somewhere, if they have achieved something great, it's like they just feel undeserving. They feel like they don't belong. They feel like they don't deserve that. It says they feel that they aren't as competent or intelligent as others might think, and that soon enough, people will discover the truth about them, that they are in fact not competent or not intelligent. Those with imposter syndrome, which is not an official diagnosis, are often well accomplished. They may hold high office, high esteem, or have numerous academic degrees, but yet they feel super undeserving. Why? I don't know. I'm talking to my therapist, Holly, about it. Okay, get off my back. But I have just, maybe is it about my low self-esteem? Maybe. I don't know.
Starts crying. Is it? It's a deep-seated self-loathing.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, probably.
Understood.
I don't really know why I'm that way.
I think, I mean, perfectionism.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a part, right?
Yeah.
Good one.
Full circle.
That is true. But it's just interesting that people with imposter syndrome, self-diagnosed or other diagnosed, often are very accomplished people. But they feel like it's the feeling that either they don't deserve it or everyone else will discover that they don't deserve it. And I think that's where it gets me the most, is that I feel like people are going to read through the lines of something and be like, wait, she got that award, or she did that, or she got this recognition. Like, why? She's an idiot.
Oh.
So I think that's what it goes to for me with imposter syndrome, is like that perfectionist shield that we often reference.
Yes. Yes.
And I hold up this shield that, like, I am high achieving, I am intelligent, I am deserving, I am reliable, I can get all this done, I do deserve like all of these accolades or whatever it might be. But it's the fear that people might like read past the shield.
The shield might become a little see-through.
Yeah.
And they can see
through. Or like if I let it slip for a moment, they'll see like the vulnerability behind it.
Because perfectionism doesn't let you believe that you can be all of those things that are on your shield and a flawed person. Right?
Yes.
Like that's where, because you can be, you are all of those things you said. And then also you do, you know, have moments of weakness or flaw or whatever. And perfectionism.
And it's like, you are smart, but you're also stupid.
Also really dumb. No, just kidding. No, we all do. I'm kidding.
She starts
crying for the third time in this episode.
Just roast me. She's like, you know, all of those things can be true at once, Alicia. You are high achieving.
I'm like, yeah, it's a shield.
Really?
Okay. Just kidding. No, but like perfectionism doesn't let you have those things that you put on your shield and the dark parts of yourself at the same time. It's like one or the other.
Yeah. And so, I would say not necessarily the dark parts, just like the human parts.
Actually, yeah. Dark is like too harsh. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're not dark. They're just human.
Normal.
Yeah.
And actually connection points, if you use them the right way. If you're a connectionist instead of a perfectionist. We're getting it trademarked. No one worry.
Yes. And something, so at my current part-time job at UVU, I've talked to my boss, Renelle, about this, because I told her I struggle with imposter syndrome and I feel I'm falling short in all these things, or I feel like I don't belong here, this, this, and that. And she was like, Alicia, you can just be human. Like, everyone will have an off day. Mm-hmm. And everyone is learning. She's like, even people who have been here for 10 years are learning.
Yeah.
And that's okay. She's like, we don't expect you to know everything. And it was kind of just, which is another thing I'll talk about with questions and expecting yourself to know everything right off the bat. Cause that's also something that I do. So anyway, I just thought
that was interesting. Oh, for sure. And I'm sure it kind of felt, I'm assuming, because if someone said that to me, it kind of felt like, oh, okay.
Very
like a little like relieving where it's like, yes. Okay, I am still learning. Thank you for telling me that that's okay.
So this actually goes into the next point of perfectionism, because my misconception was also that she was thinking about me constantly.
Oh, you know? Yes. That's such a huge part of it. Yes.
Which is so like prideful and selfish to assume everyone is thinking about you and you're like the attention of everyone's work day when actually they don't really care about. It's not that they don't care about you. It's that everyone really is kind of thinking about themselves and what they have to do. Mm-hmm. So they're not like, oh, weird. Alicia was like this late on this thing, or oh, interesting, like she had this typo. I don't know, I'm just thinking of random things. Like,
oh no, totally. And we think we think that people think to us at the level we think of ourselves, which is crazy.
Which is crazy.
I think about myself all day, and there's not no one else in my life is thinking about me all day, but I'm like, but they all are.
But are they?
But there's actually, am I an icon?
Wait, I think so. The perfectionist.
I'm over here. I'm like, Anna, Alicia, you have so many flaws. And you're like, Anna, I think you're an icon. And I think everyone thinks about you.
It's true.
I don't do. Just not.
It's not true. Okay. So the second definition of imposter syndrome I got from Urban Dictionary, which is.
We love Urban Dictionary.
This is the real dictionary. Like, this is where we actually.
This is the people's dictionary.
Yeah. Because I think words don't always carry the exact same meaning through time. They kind of like evolves. This is like what people mean when they talk about it.
Love it.
Number one, when someone believes that they've cheated their way through life despite legitimately putting in real effort into their life goals and achievements.
I wish. You've done so good at your job. Please take that out. I can't. I have to leave. No, I love it.
I just wish I had a comeback one. I'm blanking.
We need to move on.
That was cool.
We need to move on.
Someone give me a cheese one right now. Cheddar has to be somewhere. Okay. All right. Number two, when someone believes that their identity has been hijacked by an imposter and their current identity is a fraud.
Okay.
Interesting.
To be honest, I don't really know. Do you think I'm trying to be you? Because I would.
She's like, that's Number three is when someone believes that they are an imposter, but they're actually a crewmate. Is that not so cute?
I really like that.
And that one made me think of the game
Among Us. I like that a lot.
And what's interesting about Among Us, if we're going to like just continue with that parallel, is they are like a crew. Mm-hmm. And everyone is like trying to figure out who doesn't belong there. And like you're like so nervous when it is you. You're like, oh, everyone, like, am I exposing this? Am I being too obvious about blah 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 blah?
Uh-huh.
And so when you do put yourself as that imposter, you again assume everyone is thinking about you. Everyone's focusing on you. They're trying to figure out if you really do belong. If you don't, they're trying to like get the read. They're trying to see if you're like sus or whatever.
Yeah,
but you're actually just a crewmate.
I love that, and especially because like in real life, like in Among Us. If you're the imposter, it's because, isn't it because you killed someone? Is that how it works? Like the imposter is the one who like kills people?
Yes, you do kill people.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's like why? Because in real life, it's not that you're murdering people, hopefully. It's just that you're a normal human being, but you feel on the inside that that's worthy of being an imposter. That's worthy of being called out and exiled from a group of people. Mm-hmm. When in reality, technically, all of us are imposters, if you think about it that way, because we all have flaws and we're all, you know, we're all just like human beings. And so it's this idea of they're going to find out I'm a human, you know, like they're going to find out that I'm just like a normal person when everyone in the room around you is also a normal person when they're all crewmates, right?
Yes. Yeah. And they actually want you there.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. If you also, even if, let's pretend they don't like you. Like when a coworker or someone gets fired.
We wouldn't know anybody that's like
been fired. If they get fired or if they quit, like, it sucks to lose someone on your crew because then who has to, like, pick up that load? Everyone else does. So it's like, okay, even if they don't like you, like, in work, we really do all need each other.
Mm-hmm. And everyone contributes.
Everyone contributes, yeah. And maybe if someone doesn't, like, we don't know what they're going through. Maybe get to know them more. Maybe figure out their story. Like,
one of my favorite quotes.
I'm like, beautiful student in the front row. Yes. Anna?
Hi.
Go for it.
Thank you. One of my favorite quotes ever is, and I might have quoted it on here before, is by Abraham Lincoln. And it says, I don't like that man. I must get to know him better.
Mm-hmm.
Which applies to people, but also to yourself.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. I sang that for emphasis. But, like, if you don't like yourself, you need to get to know yourself better. And if you don't like someone else, you just need to get to know them better. And if people don't like you, they just need to get to know you better, you know? And, like, it's just that whole, like, emotional intimacy that we need to cultivate, which, again, connectionism cultivates that.
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, even if, you know, you don't like someone or vice versa, like, it's just getting to know them better and their story better, which will lead to empathy and connection.
Mm-hmm.
And that resentment or whatever you have there will slowly fade.
Even just that, like, unsurety or unfamiliarity with someone. Because it's like, okay, the more something is familiar to you, the more comfortable you are with it. And even when I had this discussion with my boss of, like, how I felt like I was falling short or I felt this, and that, she was like, Alicia, you've been awesome to have. Like, you have such a positive attitude and this, and that. And then she and I started talking about imposter syndrome and perfectionism. And we found a lot of common ground on, like, authors we like or things that we like to do or just things we like to educate ourselves on. And it sparked this, like, you know, connectionism conversation.
Yeah.
And, or as Eli calls it, connectionisming, which is the act of, like, carrying out perfectionism, you know?
I love it so much. So
we were connectionisming.
You were connectionisming hard.
Isming, connectionisming.
Yeah.
But it all sparked from someone opening up about something very human that is hard to show.
Yeah.
So imposter syndrome, number one. Number two, I put taking feedback personally. Why do we do that, actually? Tell me. I lost my train of thought. Why do perfectionists, like...
Oh, I mean, it goes along with what you're saying because we think everyone's thinking about us all the time. And we think that feedback... As much as we like to have a shield up and we think the shield is very thick and very impenetrable, if someone gives you feedback in your brain, it's like, oh, they saw around the shield. They saw behind the shield. They got through the shield. Yeah. Like, because I can't have a flaw. Like, and they can't know my flaws. And so if you get feedback from someone, it's, like, way more detrimental because they've not only worked through that layer or that facade that you've worked so hard to build. It's also then you just have to accept the fact that someone else can see that you're flawed, which perfectionism doesn't allow.
Yes. And I actually think this does feed back to imposter syndrome because it's like they know.
They found out. Yeah.
They found out.
Yeah.
Like, they found out that I have so much anxiety.
Yeah.
They found out that I'm really hard on myself. They found out that I'm human, that I do fall short. And I think when we're given feedback or, like, criticism, constructive criticism, maybe it's not constructive, I don't know, but we immediately think that, like, none of our strengths stand then.
Yes. You know, it erases anything good about us.
Mm-hmm. And it is just the feedback that you're given.
And that's the only thing that person sees. Also, if they're like, hey, you, like, you know, you sometimes, I don't know.
Like, hey, you show up a little bit late every day. If you could just roll in, like, on time. I really struggle with time. And so it's like, yeah, if someone were to say that, I'm like, great, that's the only thing they notice every day.
Yes, yeah.
Is that I show up late.
It, like, erases nothing else matters. Everything else, yeah. Which, like, with the balloon analogy that we've always worked off of, like, it feeds that balloon, right, that gets bigger and bigger and draws your attention away from you and what you actually are, and you're just focused on that balloon. It's just taking more and more space in the room. And when we're given feedback and you're a perfectionist, it just fills that balloon.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes very suffocating, right? It's like a balloon that fills up a whole room and it's like, I can't breathe.
And then it also just continues to, like, silo you from other people because it pushes everything else out around you.
Yeah.
So then if you weren't thinking enough about yourself already, now that's all you're going to think about.
Now that's everything.
And that's the only thing that's going to give you more anxiety.
Exactly.
Which I think when we go back to those stats, 40% take criticism and negative feedback too seriously because of perfectionism. And that's because they think about themselves a lot. And they're just like nervous, and they're maybe they really are trying their best, but they're worried that like no one else thinks that's enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which it really is. There was another one of these stats that it related to a lot. Oh, like the anxiety and depression, which I think comes a lot with like expectations, and that you do have to like be on your A game all the time and not expose your human self.
Yeah, totally.
The last thing I'll say about feedback, I have heard this and I am starting to believe it a lot more. But like if someone doesn't give you feedback, it means they don't really care about you.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So it's like also, do I really care about people if I don't give them feedback?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you are in a leadership position or a position of power in your work space, if you don't provide your like employees or your teammates, your crewmates feedback, like you don't really care about their success. You don't care about the success of the business, the team, anything like that, because you're not willing to push through that discomfort to make it better.
Yes. Yeah. It's Radical Candor by Kim Scott.
That sounds nice.
Her name. Yes.
Kim, for sure.
I don't yeah, know. Kim. Scott. She talks about the analogy of like giving feedback is like similar to when you tell someone that there's something in their teeth, right? Mm-hmm. No one ever wants to be that person. I hate being that person because like you have to do the uncomfortable job of letting someone know that they have something in their teeth and it might be embarrassing for them and you're the one facilitating that embarrassment. But if you care about that person, you're thinking, oh, they might run into someone they respect or like or whatever tonight or during the day. And if I can just do the uncomfortable job of telling them now, I'm helping them avoid that down the road.
Yeah.
But if you don't care about a person, you're like, I don't freaking care if they look bad later. Like, I don't care. I don't care at all. And so I'm just going to let them do whatever. And so it's that thought of like, if you care about someone, you're going to tell them if they have something in their teeth,
mm-hmm.
literally or figuratively.
Do we have an episode planned this season about providing feedback?
We do now.
Okay. I'm going to take a quick side note. Feedback.
But yeah, it's and it's also, you know, it's also the thought of if you see a relationship having actual long-term potential, then you will give feedback to help that relationship flourish and thrive. And if you don't care about that relationship, you won't give the feedback needed for that relationship to flourish and thrive. Mm-hmm. Even if it's uncomfortable, right? It's kind of like that proportion of like you're willing to have these really uncomfortable conversations because you care about the relationship that deeply,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And this, I know we did talk about it in our third season with romantic relationships.
Yes.
And I think like within those relationships, you are forced a little bit more to provide feedback because you are so intertwined with one another. Mm-hmm. But at work, you could just say like, oh, I don't have to see this person at the end of the day, like whatever.
Yeah, you're not going home to them. Yeah.
But it's interesting because I think for the most part, it's been proven that we spend more time with our coworkers than we do our families.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I've heard that before. I don't know like how true it is, but what other people in your life do you spend 8 hours, sometimes more, mm-hmm. right, a day with? And then once you get home, who's to say that all your family members are home when you get home and like all that stuff, or your roommates or, you know, or whoever, or your significant other, like, especially if you have opposite schedules from your mm-hmm. significant other, like you really do see your coworkers quite a bit more.
Yeah. Crazy.
And so like really in the great scheme of things, like not that those relationships are more long term by any means, obviously mm-hmm. the one with your significant other is, but like you are spending more time with them. Mm-hmm. So you technically should be spending more time making sure it's a good relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I was going to say something about that, but I was just listening to what you were saying.
That's all right. That's okay.
I just think they're worth investing in because the people around you are worth investing in. The relationships around you are worth investing in because that's our life, really. Yeah. Like at the end of the day, when we die, no one's going to like go and give your resume or your CV or whatever at your funeral. Like they're going to talk about the relationships that you built. They don't really care if you actually showed up to work on time all the time or if you did have this one flaw at work or if, you know, like whatever it might be.
Yeah.
They just care about the relationships you built. And that's all really we should care about, too.
Yes.
So I think just invest the time in receiving feedback and being grateful for feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Because that means someone cares about sharing it with you.
Yes. Yeah.
And they care about like exposing maybe a blind spot that you might not see. And maybe even ask a follow-up question of like, hey, that's like, thank you for providing this feedback for me. Do you have like support where I could maybe learn more about this or where I could develop more professionally or whatever? Like, it could become such a great thing. But perfectionists love to just like load that feedback on top of them and just carry the weight forever.
Yeah.
Instead of letting it just like, you know, fuel them.
Totally. Totally.
Okay. I'm taking up a lot of time. So I'll go through these next few quickly so we can get to Anna's. The other thing I was going to talk about is assuming everyone is thinking about you, which we talked about with imposter syndrome. I didn't realize like how closely the two actually
They're very close. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're very, very close.
Also, if you're thinking about you that much, like we should think about looking outward a little bit more.
For sure.
And one thing I genuinely just love is getting to know people. Like I love getting to know people and their stories and like why, how did they end up at this job? Where do they want to go in the future? Tell me about your family. What did you eat for dinner last night? Like, I love talking about all these things because that really is what matters, mm-hmm. like outside of work. So maybe if you struggle like obsessing over yourself, which I know I do sometimes, and feeling like the imposter or feeling like the pedestal, mm-hmm. where it's like, I'm so much better than everyone and this is that. Like, look outside of yourself because there really is so much more outside of you.
Yes.
The so next true. One is the fear of doing things if I don't do it perfectly.
Yeah.
For example, this podcast. Anna and I, how many times did we record episode one?
Too many times.
Way too many times.
Took my soul for yeah. me. So was, many times.
And it was funny because I remember when we recorded episode one, mm-hmm. we were in my bedroom. We literally sat on my bed together and recorded it. Like mic stands like in our laps.
Yeah.
And we had an outline and we went through. And it was like, how long was it? Like an hour and a half maybe? Yeah. We just wanted to spill like everything we ever yeah. learned about perfectionism. It was not good.
It was so bad.
But after guys, we recorded it.
It was so bad.
Do you remember how we felt though after we recorded?
We were like, that's the best thing anyone's ever dude, made.
This is going to change the world.
Like, are you going to go viral right yeah, now?
Because this is happening. Like, we actually felt like it was so
quit my day job right then and there.
Yeah, I remember you texted me after you edited the episode and you were like, so actually this is garbage.
So actually we suck.
Yeah. And like the equipment wasn't right.
The
and
audio like, was bad.
And
yeah.
just like we weren't to the point enough. We were a little bit too scattered. We had so much bad, we wanted yes. to share. And none of that is bad.
Yeah.
But we let that stop us from releasing actually an episode for a long time. Because we were like, oh, we have to make sure the audio is perfect. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure we have like this more together. Our flow has to be more on point. We ended up recording that episode.
Like, I think four times.
I think at least four times.
Which doesn't sound that long, but when they're hour long episodes and you're replanning it every time, like it's a lot of time
mm-hmm.
that we could have released more episodes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And just kept moving. And like also the obsession of like, who really is going to listen to episode one more than once, like as many times as we did.
Yeah,
we would listen to it and then listen to it again
yeah.
to see if we missed anything and like yeah. you know we just obsessed so much over that, which literally stopped us from recording more episodes and releasing more episodes, which took more time, more energy, more planning mm-hmm. just because we had to do it perfectly or not do
oh
it.
Totally.
And we kind of dropped that mindset because I think we've gotten so much better. Like,
yeah,
we still recorded episodes in our bedrooms, but like our equipment got a little bit better each time.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a studio. We like tried finding a studio. We tried creating our own, but we just kept going.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, we have to have everything together before we do it, you know?
Oh, totally. And I'll bring in the study for the next episode. There's a study my boss is talking about where you have to weigh value. Of like, if something is 80% good, mm-hmm. right? Is it worth perfecting the 20% at like, okay, how do I say this? Is it worth sacrificing getting it out there for the 20% it would take to get it to be perfect? Mm-hmm. And it's like this ratio that you like basically balance out. And she was saying that like 9 times out of 10, that extra 20% is not worth it compared to the value you'd get from just getting it out there. Mm-hmm. It's like this whole study with like all these numbers. I'll bring it in like the next episode, but that just goes to show often we obsess over the 20% and the return on investment that 20% gives us doesn't compare to the return on investment we would have had from just getting out quantity, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of obsessing over the quality all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not, and it's also like you're not putting out crap content. Mm-hmm. Like it's, most of it is good. Most of it's great.
80% is a B, baby.
Yeah.
That's great. C's get degrees, bring it on at a B.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That is great.
Yeah.
Going back to the Hardin Group stats that were shared, 86% believe their work is impacted by perfectionist expectations. And I think that hits the nail on the head because it's like, I expect myself to do this perfectly or not do it at all.
Yeah.
And I remembered from another study that we'll share down the road about creativity. Someone said something that stops artists from creating is the fear of not living up to their last good piece.
Oh, that's so real.
Or the fear of repeating their last failure.
That's so real.
Interesting, because it's like it doesn't matter like if someone created something stunning or like the best they've ever done, they'll still be afraid of like matching that again.
I relate to that hard.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I relate to that hard. I actually, Taylor Swift, you guys, actually talked about this in her documentary.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet, by the way.
It's really great. It was the Miss Americana one that she came out with a couple years ago.
Oh.
It's on Netflix.
Okay, true. Anyway, fan.
I just watched it recently because I went and saw the Eras movie for my friend's birthday. And then I was like, I should watch her other thing. Anyway, she talks about how in the music industry specifically, which is a workplace, that if you don't level up your album compared to the last one, it is seen as what she quoted, a colossal disaster.
Oh.
Yeah. And I feel like in the workplace that happens a lot. Like people, you know, they have polls and surveys and stuff where they ask people, are you more afraid of failure and success? And a lot of people say they're afraid of success because they don't know how to live up to that success.
Well,
they're afraid of like becoming successful because maintaining that success is such a tall order and so daunting. And I relate to that so hard. Like I definitely feel that. So it's a real thing.
Yeah, I get that too.
Yeah.
I remember So I played soccer in high school and I was not a star, that's for sure. And I remember my sophomore year, I was on JV, but I was the captain on JV, which is exciting. And we were at a playoff game for state against American Fork. And it was the second half. We were tied. Nothing was really happening. Our players were getting exhausted. Our coach is like, all right, I'm going to put JV players in. Like, who wants to go in? And I was like, me. Like, I want to go in.
Yeah.
So I went in as a forward and I ended up scoring like the winning goal. Like I scored our goal.
Okay. Soccer mommy.
I can't remember if it was like 1-0 or 2-1 or whatever.
Okay.
But I scored. And it really was just because I was in the right place at the right time and I had fresh legs, you know?
Listen to this imposter syndrome girl over here. Alicia, it's because you were good. That might have contributed, but you also,
Well, I was good.
Yeah.
I think I like really, really struggled with perfectionism back then and didn't know it. So I do think it stunted a lot of my potential because I've even played with like friends now and they're like, dude, I think you're actually better than you were in high school. But it's because I was under so much pressure in high school that I put upon myself because my fear after scoring that goal was like, now I have to do that again. Now I have to like repeat that.
Yeah.
Now every time like our team needs a goal and it's like 5 minutes on the clock and they're going to throw in Turner on the top, like, I have to do that now. Yeah. I have to score.
That's a lot of pressure, yeah.
And it's funny because I play the best when I have the least amount of pressure, like, on myself.
Yeah.
But, like, I do well under pressure. It's just the expectation that I have to repeatedly perform, like, excellence and, like, deliver.
Yeah.
So within the workplace, this stunts a lot of things. Creativity, collaboration, yada, yada, yada. I know it's hurt me immensely because I'm afraid to, like, throw ideas or do things that could be great, but they don't even come to fruition because of that 20% that you were referring to.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
The last thing I'll touch about with my experience in the workplace is the fear of asking questions and assuming that I should know everything from day one.
Mm.
Do you have that?
No. I actually ask too many questions.
So I think I've gotten a lot better at this, but I would be so afraid of asking questions because if someone told me something one time, like I should remember that, right?
Mm.
So it's like, I've already asked this question. Like, why do I have to ask it again?
Yeah.
And I think I have a lot of like enduring vulnerabilities or insecurities. I think everyone does. But one of mine is like my ADHD.
is pretty intense. And so sometimes, like, I forget things, or if someone tells me something, I might be thinking about something else at that time, or like attention can be difficult for me.
Yeah.
So I remember as a kid, like, things having to be repeated to me all the time because I am in another world. I'm in Alicia world.
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm dumb or because I'm this or that, like a bad student, or I don't care. It's just like the way that my brain is. But to me, it's because I'm dumb. To me, it's because I can't take instructions, because I'm the wild card, because I'm always in la la land, which is like what I've been told, you know?
Yeah.
So that carried through into the workplace, where it's like, oh no, I can't ask too many questions because then they'll think I don't listen, because then they'll think I'm dumb.
Because you're afraid of how they're perceiving you.
Because I'm like, yeah, I just can't do this, because then also that will be true. And I know they're thinking that.
Which is crazy, because like asking those questions would give you more clarity and more context to do your job well. But you sacrifice doing your job well for how people are perceiving you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really a big part of why perfectionism is so harmful in the workplace.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, totally. And I was going to say too, like, I think something I've done a lot is undersell and overdeliver.
Yeah.
I really struggle like selling myself in an interview sometimes.
Okay. Yeah.
Like the more questions I get asked or this and that, I'm like, actually, like, I don't know if you guys really want to hire me. Like, I'm okay.
This was a mistake.
I don't belong here. You know, it's like, that's how I felt a little bit, even like for an admin position at UVU, which is not like, I am someone who firmly believes that no job is beneath you.
Yeah.
Like if you think a job is beneath you, you need to like check your pride. But also, like, you can do so much if you just try, and if you just like apply and do something. Like, no job is out of reach, just as much as no job is beneath you.
Yeah.
So I applied for this admin position, and I knew I could do it. I knew I would excel at it. Like, I know I can do all these things. I've done it before.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But even in the interview, I felt the need to like really sell myself, because it's like, oh, what if they don't choose me? Like, what if they don't like me? This feels so serious. Like, oh no, am I qualified for this position? Like, I just started thinking about all these things.
Yeah.
And it's like looking at job opportunities and work as opportunity for growth and progression, not necessarily like an award or a stamp on
a pass or fail.
Mm-hmm, pass or fail, or a stamp on your self-worth, or like anything like that. Anyway, so it's just the fear of asking questions, the fear of admitting that you don't know everything.
Yeah.
Because it's like, wait, should I? The answer is no.
Like, literally no one does. Yeah.
No one does. But for some reason, like, I think I should know everything.
Because of perfectionism.
I know. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's like 100 other ways. And I'm sure like as we go into your story, I'll relate a lot to them. But that's mine. And I know so many people relate and need to hear it. If you do relate to any of those things that I said, please continue to listen to this season and share it with people. And even share it at work with friends and coworkers. And it's something you all can chat about. Like, I know and believe that this conversation and these messages can change the workplace, can change the success of individuals, of companies, of teams, collaboration, culture, all of these things.
Oh, yeah, totally. And both of us coming from like corporate backgrounds, 2 years of corporate background before we got fired.
But we got spicy released, Anna.
Okay.
It was just a spicy goodbye.
It was a spicy redirection.
Redirection.
Like in Emperor's New Groove, do you remember? She's like, we're moving in a different direction.
Yeah.
I love it. It is rampant in corporate cultures and corporate environments, because it's all about how people are perceiving you. And you have to climb the ladder. And in order to climb the ladder, you have to be the one that's the best, like that's looking the best and looking like they're doing the best and getting the most accolades and getting the most achievements. And you use that to climb the ladder, and you know, you want to look good to leadership, and you want to look good to your boss and to your coworkers. And it's just like this constant like tornado of perfectionism. Now we're both back at UVU, and I'd say it's way better in higher education, best because it's higher education, and your full, you know, purpose is to just make the school experience better for students.
And like personal preference, because we both love school and
I love you. Yeah. Yeah. So like it's a lot, you know, better and easier. And like you're not going to get paid more for doing a better job in higher ed, because you know what I mean? Like in corporate America, it's like, okay, I'm going to do amazing and then I'll get a raise. In higher ed, it's like, okay, I'm going to do amazing for the sake of it. Like it's just, you don't get like, you know, anyway. But I now work, I do marketing preview for the School of Education, and actually as we were preparing for the season, we had a big event happening, which is the Lieutenant Governor's coming to campus to speak to students. And because I'm the marketing person, I'm in charge of doing all the marketing for the event. And so I did, and I got posters printed, I got flyers printed, I got digital signs up on all the TVs all over campus. I had stuff sent out in emails, I had social posts, I did all the things I was supposed to do, and I did it well. And I get a text from the chief of staff of the university.
Mm-hmm. Can we know?
Who is also the VP of marketing. And she says, can you check your email? And this is at like 6:30 p.m. And I was like, sure. Did I do something amazing? Yeah, I was like, did I?
He's like, hey, can I get promoted for you?
Yeah, I'm like, am I getting promoted? Check my email. I have an email from the president of the university. She has CC'd the chief of staff and the dean of my school and my boss and my boss's boss.
Oh.
And it is sent to me. And the email says, hi, the lieutenant governor is coming to campus and her name is spelled wrong on all of the assets that we have around campus. I don't think that this is, she literally said, she literally said, this is a horrible look for our university and whoever made this mistake, she sent it to me. She knew I made it. She said it needs to be fixed immediately. And so I had to go through and like get everything taken down, get it all reprinted. She was going to be there in 2 days. So it was like horrifying. And like as a perfectionist, that like destroyed me because I had just gotten into this job and I wanted to do a good job. But then also suddenly like, because I'm actually inversely very good at interviews. Like I'd say it's like one of my like top strengths is interviewing. Like I've only had one job that I've ever interviewed for that I didn't get. Mm-hmm. And it was because they hired someone internally. And that's not like that's not something that I'm like wanting to like flex about. Like I just do really well interviews, and we know this is like a thing of mine, is I'm always afraid of not living up to my first impression, always. Mm-hmm. Socially, professionally, whatever it is. And so I was like, okay, shoot, like I'd given them this really good impression of what kind of employee I'd be and that I'd be able to like do a lot for the school. My first major event, I spelled her name wrong.
Yeah.
And the president of the university had to personally call me out. Like, it was horrible. I called Alicia and I was like hyperventilating. I was like, can you just tell me I'm not the worst person on the planet? And she's like, did you kill someone? And I was like, no, I just had a typo. Like, it was so bad. But you did a really good job of reminding me that like, even the president of the university and even all those people CC'd on the email, they've messed up too. And they've had flaws too, right? Like they've had moments where their mistakes were put on stage in a spotlight. Like,
yep.
And they're still learning. Just how your boss talked to you about like, you know, she'd been there. There's people who've been there for 10 years, 15 years who have made mistakes. And like, I'm not just that mistake. Like, no. I did my whole job well. I got all of the marketing assets out. I got like, I did everything well. I just had one mistake, but it overshadowed like everything else I had done.
Mm-hmm. And it was Anna, you spelled lieutenant right. I'm 26 and I don't even know how to spell it right now.
It was abbreviated. It was LT period. I didn't spell anything right. I said, shoot. I really appreciate you like trying to throw me a bone there, but I did it.
You know, and it's funny too, though, because Anna's like, you were previously an English major. And see, this is coming from the perspective where spelling and reading and writing and reading comprehension, all of that was my biggest weakness in school.
Yeah.
Because of my ADHD.
Yeah.
Like, biggest weakness. So if someone sent me that, I'd be like, yeah, no doubt, like that I for sure did that.
Yeah,
like, I suck at spelling and I already know this, so it probably would have just dug this hole for me more, where it's like solidifying, you can't spell, you're dumb. But for you, it's like, oh no, that's not who I am now. Yes. I think I'm this.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes. And again, I'm focusing more on how people are perceiving me rather than just like doing my job and picking it up as it goes, right? And just like taking it in strides. Yeah.
Side note for this, someone, I think they said it in church recently or something, but they said, no one wants to be comforted by someone who has never known discomfort.
Ooh.
And I love that, because I think you can snap.
Thank you. I know. I saw you like.
And I love that, because like, how comforting would it be to know that everyone who was CC'd on that email had also made a mistake before?
Yeah.
And it would have like. And we know that they have, whether they said that or not. Did anyone ever say that, by the way? If you talked to them or confronted them?
No, I didn't confront anyone.
Really?
I just silently fixed my mistake. And I was I sent messages to all of them. I was like, I'm so sorry. I promise this isn't me.
Yeah.
And they just were like, just get it fixed. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. I'm sure if you like had one-on-one connectionisming conversations with them, that they would say, you know, I've done something like that too. And it's so comforting to know that you can be comforted by someone who's been in that same position.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of just being like, oh, weird, I've never made a mistake before.
Yeah.
Which we've talked about is like the opposite of connection. You can't relate to anyone who's never done anything wrong.
Oh, ever. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And totally, what kind of leader would you want to have if they have never messed up? Oh, can you imagine the pressure?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I think we've all had bosses or managers who are very perfectionist and can see, if not now, hopefully after you listen to the podcast, see how that bleeds in to like literally everything, because I've had bosses who are crazy, crazy perfectionist, and it does stunt the creativity. It stunts the innovation. It stunts all of the things that make you a good employee, all the things that are good for companies. Perfectionism kills. Because, I mean, think about it, like, not to throw the president under the bus, but think about like how nervous I'm going to be now the next time I do a big event. Like,
right.
And how much time I'm going to be spending obsessing over making sure all the little details like that are right. Which, yes, her name should have been spelled right. I will admit that.
Yes.
But, like, I'm going to be obsessing over all these little details when I could be, you know, putting more assets out or getting the word out more. Obviously, I'm going to try to not do that, but it's going to be hard not to, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard not to. And I think also with perfectionism in the workplace, it's all about saving face. You constantly want to save face. And in addition to that, you want to save other people's face for them. We were talking to one of our professors this week about this concept, and we talked about how we're sometimes hesitant to call out other people's darknesses because we're afraid to hold our own. And so we don't want to go there with them because we are not willing to go there with ourselves. And right. So like, not only will we not, you know, not only will we save our faces so hard, we'll save other people's faces. And that's so detrimental, again, because it's like, you're preventing them from growing and you're preventing them from improving because you're afraid to tell them their blind spots, or you're afraid to tell them about the thing in their teeth, right? Because you don't want to talk about the thing in your teeth, so you're not going to bring attention to someone else's thing, right? And then we all are just walking around with stuff in our teeth all day because no one wants to talk about the things in people's teeth. Teeth, oh my gosh. Yeah, I was an English major. I can't do anything right. But like, that's huge in the workplace. Like, that's huge in being able to cultivate a culture where mistakes not only can be acknowledged,
mm-hmm.
not only can safely be confronted, but that they are genuinely utilized for value, right? They're utilized for good. And it takes a lot to get a company's culture there. And like, again, the way that you get that, I think, is by bringing in people like us, right? Or mm-hmm. people who are experts in that to illustrate how that can be done in more than we can do in just a podcast episode. But yeah, that's like a big thing.
On the vein of saving face, it's like saving face from what?
From, you know, fake threat. Yeah. From your perception being shattered.
Yeah.
The facade that you created, the shield you've put up. Yeah.
And it's so interesting, like, the effort that goes into saving face, because it's not really saving anything.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You're not doing it any good.
Yeah.
By not providing feedback or trying to save your own butt from something.
Mm-hmm.
I think it goes a lot into like ownership and owning up to mistakes or whatever it might be. But I would just think that, like, saving it from what?
Yeah,
and,
like
the
that.
Little things we do to avoid things like that. Like, do you know, I don't know, a silly example might be like, if everyone's talking about a movie and they're like, oh, have you ever seen this movie? And you haven't. And you're like, oh, yeah, for sure. Just to like be in the conversation.
Yes, yes.
But like, prove you belong.
There might be someone else in the group who hasn't seen it, but they don't want to like say they haven't seen it, so they're like, yeah, I've seen it too. And
yes,
you two could have like connected over that, right? But that like connection is then lost, mm-hmm. right? The opportunity for connection is lost because you were afraid to speak up about it.
And even just being like true to yourself, like,
yeah,
literally just saying,
like, integrity,
the truth.
Yeah.
And being like, even if though it's something so tiny, I know y'all have done it, I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have. Like, okay, fine, I do this all the time because I want to fit in.
Yeah.
And that's what it goes to. And so, like, you have to just start, you know, stop there with, like, tiny things like that where you might be trying to save your face with something little. Be like, oh, actually, no, I haven't seen that. Or I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Or, hey, will someone explain this to me? Oh, my gosh. In the division at UVU I am in is Institutional Advancement, who does, like, all the fundraising and yada, yada, yada. There's so many acronyms about everything
yes.
in that division.
Yeah.
this is probably true across the board of the world. People just love acronyms. Mm-hmm. It makes things easier. There are so many meetings when I have to be like, what does the acronym mean? I don't know what that one is. I don't know what this one is. And then someone will explain it and someone else will be like, oh, I didn't know that either. So it's just admitting and being truthful. Yes. And remember, like, you're not saving your face from anything when you think that you actually are.
Yes, exactly. And the level that you're willing to take your vulnerability, you then give other people permission to meet that level.
Yes.
Right? So once you open that up from yourself, you then give... You then give everyone around you permission to match that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's so hard, but it's so needed to be the person to do that first, right? Mm-hmm. And be the person to like open that up. So I'll just end on one more example. So my dad is he's a counselor at a high school, and it's like helping kids transition to college. So he's not like a high school, he doesn't counsel high schoolers on high school. He counsels them on like getting to college, essentially.
I think he'd still be a high school counselor.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. So something like that. But he was on the morning announcements or something, like he was giving an announcement. Mm-hmm. And he made some quip, some joke while he was announcing. And after he gave it, this woman, like, and it was a joke, I don't remember it, but I thought it was like really funny when he was telling me the story. And this woman came into his office and she was like, how dare you say that to our students? Like, like this, like just very intense, like very calm out. And my dad, I was home for a couple weeks ago, and he relayed this to me, and he was like, it ruined my whole weekend.
Aww.
He was like, it ruined my whole weekend. And he was like, and I don't know why, because I had just told him about this thing, right? Where I was like, I spelled the lieutenant governor saying blah, blah, blah. And after I told him, I was able to just kind of forget about it a little bit and just like be present and be with the family. And he's like, how did you do that? He was like, because I'm still thinking about that, and it happened to me a couple weeks ago, and that whole weekend was just ruined for me because of it. And we were able to talk through, right, where I was like, the reason that you were so affected by that is because you had to realize that someone saw you as flawed. And he actually came to that conclusion on his own, which was really cool. Because I told him, I was like, Dad, this is perfectionism happening in your workplace right now.
At its finest.
Like, at its finest, because someone came and pointed out, which I don't really think was even a flaw, but she thought it was a flaw. I thought it was hilarious. But she came out and pointed out a flaw to him, and he literally said this himself. He's like, I suddenly realized that she saw me as not perfect. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was like, Dad, perfectionism. And he was like, oh my gosh. And he actually sent me, I'm going to read this text from him, because it was really... I thought like very moving to me and illustrated like very well everything that we talk about. He sent me this text and he said, so last night I was a speaker at a steak fireside. It was an average performance on my part. That's when I usually beat myself up. But then I remembered what you taught me about it affecting my self-image. And that's why I took it so hard. Your coaching really helped me walk down from the ledge last night. I did average and was okay with it. That never happens. Thank you.
Go coach Anna. I don't know why I like that.
I loved it. I loved it. But that's just to show that even just realizing what perfectionism does and where it attacks in the workplace can make that big of a difference. My dad and I had probably a 4-minute conversation about this. Mm-hmm. And now he had another instance a week later where it saved his weekend, right? He was able to walk back from the ledge. And we're just hoping that can do that with you guys, like that we can open your eyes up to things that are going to help you not only get over these moments faster, but maybe help them not happen at all, you know, and like help you.
I think they will happen regardless.
Oh, no, they'll happen. Sorry. But I mean, like your reaction to them, right? Like this like longstanding reaction to things like that.
And it's like, if you listen to our coaching, you might never make mistakes.
We will make you perfect.
That's what popping perfectionism is about.
Yeah.
What's interesting too, though, about your dad is like, how much is he going to hesitate making the next joke?
Yeah.
And how much are you going to hesitate next time you have to volunteer to do marketing and spelling for all this advertising, you know?
Yeah.
But when we change that mindset, we can step forward with like a confidence in our previous learning experience. It's like, okay, I learned this last time, so I can do this time.
Yeah.
Another thing about living more true to who you are and not being a chameleon, which we talk about in our very first season, which is basically like changing your color, like who you are and who you appear to be based on your audience.
Yeah.
You can never make a joke that'll land with everybody.
Oh, yeah.
You can never be a person that everyone in the world will like, ever, literally.
Yeah.
And so I think the more we step into a more like truer version of ourselves or a less perfectionist version of ourselves, things like that will naturally start happening more. But it's just like being more okay with it, being more aware of it, like your dad was.
Yeah.
I'm so happy for him.
I know. I was too. I know. Good old Russell.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah. It was awesome. Okay. We're going to wrap up this episode. We've got a lot of great stuff coming the rest of the season. Again, we're going to have a lot of great guests and topics that I think will illustrate it even more clearly than we are even able to today, right? Because we just wanted to paint like an overall picture of what perfectionism is in the workplace.
And why, and really like why you need to listen to this season, seriously.
Like it applies to you, it applies to your friends, it applies to your family, it applies to your coworkers, your boss. Like it really is just like so important. So we're going to wrap up this episode with some takeaways.
So good. One day you should like wrap it or something. I don't know.
Okay, I'll do it.
Is it too much? I kind of want you to.
We got to innovate and improvise. I'm willing to wrap.
Love it.
I'm willing to do it. First takeaway is perfectionism is more rampant in the workplace than we think. And if you think that it doesn't affect you, it's like the patriarchy, really. Like,
really.
I said this in the last episode, but in the Barbie movie, right, where Ken asks that guy about something and he's like, oh no, we still do patriarchy, we just hide it better.
Yes, so
that's
good.
Truly, like, if you don't think perfectionism is affecting your workplace, it I can guarantee it is.
It's just hiding.
It's just hiding better, yeah.
Number two is that perfectionism is stunting your career, whether you think it is or not. I think how people look at perfectionism, they normally like associate it with females because that has a lot to do with image and comparison like that, or social media or appearance. But when it comes to the workplace and money and someone's job and titles, I think men typically compare that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Way more. I don't know why I'm even saying typical. Yeah. That's like the badge of honor that guys wear is their money, their assets, their job. And it is literally stunting your professional career.
Yes. Yeah. And third, we can help you fix that.
I can fix that.
I can fix that. Oh, yeah. I'm so cold, Sam. I can fix that.
Oh, that sounds, I don't, that sounded like
I was like, you're the one who quoted the movie. I was like, don't you know this?
So, like, oh my gosh. That just sounded like an old man. Like, I'm so cold, Sam.
That's what she says when she's dying.
She's like, oh, that's so sad. I need to watch
she's
that
like,
movie.
I'm so cold, Sam. And there's like ghost man appears and he's like, I can fix that. And then she dies. Anyway, okay, well, we will see you guys on the next episode. Remember to review, rate some stars, as I've said before. Give us a rating if you feel so inclined. Check out our social media. We'll be posting a lot more this season. Hopefully a lot more like stuff that can be shared too on social, so it'll be easier to tell your friends and stuff, things that have helped you. And
yeah, that is all.
My name is Anna.
My name's Alicia.
And this is Popping Perfectionism.